Hi, and welcome to Being Lutheran, a podcast dedicated to proclaiming the excellencies of Jesus Christ and the biblical theology expressed in the Lutheran Confessions. Today, Pastor Jason Goodham, Pastor Brett Bowe, and Pastor Adam Osher invite a very special guest, Pastor Andrew Nealon, to discuss the treatise of the power and primacy of the Pope. Being Lutheran is sponsored by the Free Lutheran Bible College and Seminary in Plymouth, Minnesota. Whatever your vocation, start here, go anywhere, grounded in God's Word.
Welcome to the Being Lutheran podcast. I am Pastor Brett Bowe, and I'm joined by
Pastor Jason Goodham
and Pastor Adam Osher
and
Pastor Andrew Nealon.
Yes, so we want to say welcome to our special guest today. Andrew Nealon is with us, and
making his long-anticipated debut.
Yeah.
Is this your first time? One time only.
This is it, guys. So.
Oh. Well, it feels like
it puts the pressure on you, not on us.
I suppose it does.
So today we are starting a series on the treatise on the power and the primacy, in the primacy of the poop.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh,
didn't see that coming.
That's not good. All right, no. We might have to redo that.
No, that's staying on.
That's staying. Okay. Anyhow,
who is Andrew Nealon and why should we care?
Yeah,
thank you for having me today. I'm trying to not do a British accent for you guys.
Thank you.
I work here at the school with some of you guys. I work as the Institutional Effectiveness Director.
What does that mean?
Yeah, who knows? I don't
Free
even know
Lutheran
yet.
Bible College
I do Seminary. Work with assessment, with accreditation, things like that. But I also get to teach. That's the fun part. I get to teach some church history in the seminary, in the Bible college. So it's a lot of fun.
And your ABD?
Yes. I'm almost a doctor. For a long time now, it's been ABD. All but death, all but dissertation. Getting close, though.
What's your dissertation going to be on? Is it fun?
It was fun. Yeah, it's the history. The history of how Genesis 1:26 has been interpreted through the early centuries of church history, that phrase, image and likeness of God. Some early church figures held that it meant your physical body as a part of what it meant to be in the image of God, and then that fell
into
disuse.
That's a Mormon thing.
Yeah, well, maybe they traced their interpretation to Irenaeus. No, I doubt it.
Joseph Smith. That was your answer. That was where you were looking.
Church fathers, Irenaeus and Joseph Smith.
Lockstep.
Moroni, the angel with the tablets. How did this happen? I should stop talking.
We're 370 episodes deep into this project and still haven't been able to answer that question, so I don't think we're going to start now. Right, where are we going, Brett?
Yeah. So, you know, instead of the three of us schmoes, I don't know, you
schmoes,
call us that?
Schmucks.
Schmucks. Putzes, yeah, just trying to figure out, wade our way through history of the treatise, and we thought it'd be great to have a guest to join us, and for Andrew specifically to talk about the history and things going into the treatise on the. Now I feel like I have to never say that in a British accent again, but
please don't.
Just refer to it as the treatise because everyone
else treatise,
does.
The treatise. Yes, there you go.
Melanchthon wasn't very good at naming things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not his specialty.
Right.
Among other things.
Other
apparently.
Things also weren't his specialty.
Right. Right. So we've gotten all the way this way through the Book of Concord. We come to this point, and we thought it would be super great to have some of that historical background of going on the treatise. And so I guess just to start there, and I know Andrew, you said you're more of an early church guy. But how can we trace the history of what's I know the treatise is it talks about the Pope especially, but kind of going back into early church, just kind of walk us through some of the history of how the idea of the Pope came to be and how that was developed through church history up to the time of Melanchthon and so on.
Yeah, you better start with Peter, the first Pope.
Pope Peter. Well, no, it's interesting because it really developed in fits and starts through church history. Slowly, but then all at once, like in the 5th century especially. Early church, like the Ante-Nicene period in the first couple hundred years, most Christians looked to Rome for as an arbiter or as a source of authority. You see guys like Irenaeus, like I mentioned, he was up in France as a pastor, but he looked to Rome as a source of authority, as the Church of Peter, because it was Peter's church. Before him, though, like Clement of Rome, one of the first bishops of Rome, he wrote a letter to the Corinthians who needed help. No surprise, Paul.
Yeah. So nothing had changed.
Right. It didn't catch. So Clement wrote a letter to the Corinthians, and an authoritative letter asking for their correction, you know. Hmm. So that position of authority was even at 100 is when he died. But then in the 5th century, things happened quick. First pope to use the word pope in contrast to the other bishops and the other even other major cities.
Did he just, like, call that himself?
Dibs on it.
Yeah, he called dibs on pope. Like, you're going to call me the pope. Is that how it went? Like, do you know the story there?
It's from the Latin papa, just means father, and I think it was a term used to set himself apart from the other
that
churches.
Already sounds way less cool.
A British accent would make it cooler, though.
Yeah.
Or yes. Notorious B.I.G.
I was waiting for that.
Yes,
sort of
I was going to sing it. Love it when you call me Big Papa. Did he do that? Is that where it came from? Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
but to the tune of a liar.
For the record, I recently heard from a listener who stopped listening to the program when I started.
Five and a half minutes.
You're the one that brought it up.
So for those of you who've stuck with it and are listening to this and I'm speaking, Mom, I thank you for all your support and love.
Even in the Adam era.
Even in the era of me. Anyway, so back to Notorious B.I.G., we're saying.
It kept on going in the 5th century pretty quickly. Guys like Boniface claimed to be the head of the church, you know, using language like that. Another pope said that all greater causes are reserved for Rome. So they're claiming more and more authority here in the 5th century. But then you get temporal authority mixed into it, too, with guys like Leo and then Gregory later in the a few centuries after Leo, claiming that not only was the pope of Rome head of the church, but supreme over even the state. Kind of bringing that into it too, and that's the medieval trajectory. Then, where you get the Lutherans calling this out, the church and the state together functioning with the pope as the head of both is inappropriate. And Melanchthon was quick to call that out.
Mm. Yeah, that's the situation. It's you know, we've talked about, I think, in just about every document of the Book of Concord up to this point, that there is a real historical situation and context that necessitates what the early Lutherans were doing. You know, you've got the Diet of Augsburg and the Augsburg Confession, and you've got Luther's Saxon visitations for the catechisms, and you've got all that. It is very important for us to understand why the Lutherans needed to reject the papacy. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it almost perpetuates the that's too Catholic feel of the Protestant Reformation, that we're doing it because it's a Catholic thing. And no, there were actual spiritual, and I would probably even say philosophical objections that the Lutherans had to the entire idea of the papacy, you know, probably from a Lutheran perspective, I think, and we'll get into this as we get into the context, the content of the treatise. One of the big ones is the Pope insists on calling himself the Vicar of Christ, which is pretty big. But understanding the flow of it through history is important to understand. Is like, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
And the progression too, from not just Rome being chief arbiter, but Rome being the chief authority. I think there's a difference and a distinction between those two things.
Yeah, there's, you know, this is an interesting situation for us to talk about in the AFLC because we're non-synodical. All of our congregations, for all intents and purposes, are autonomous and independent. We do have an office of the president, and the office of the president in the AFLC does act as arbiter in church disputes.
He's basically the pope.
Yeah, well, I call him Pope Germsted. I do call him that. But
he'd love that.
the structure of the LCMS works in the same way, where arbitration and wisdom and counsel in that way. But when the papacy, when Rome starts hoarding authority for itself, then we kind of go off the rails.
Yeah, and we'll get into the content, I'm sure, but they cite, or Melanchthon cites both Jerome and Gregory in here. And both Jerome and Gregory would say that the Pope is the supreme arbiter. They would look to Rome as a supreme decider, you know, the place you go to with disputes. But the reason that Melanchthon included them, I'm sure, is because of this distinction from not just arbitration to authority and primacy, which is too far.
Yeah, and you said one of the quotes in the treatise is actually Melanchthon's appealing to one of these guys, but these guys are quoting from the perspective of the papacy, saying, no, the East can't do this, right?
Yeah, that's Gregory. He looked to the Patriarch of Constantinople, who was trying to call himself the Arch Patriarch, or the Archbishop of Constantinople. And Gregory said, you can't do that. Because I am.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, I think of this document, you know, being kind of one of the shorter ones, thinking in the Book of Concord just how they didn't originally want to include something about the papacy in the Augsburg Confession. And now having it kind of like an extra part of, or almost like an add-on appendix, sort of. I don't know if that's a good way to say it.
But, no, yeah.
Any sort of historical context to why they would have done that at that, or why they would have waited and then later on said, we need to say something about the papacy.
The conciliatory tone of the Augsburg Confession is the Lutherans were not opposed to Emperor Charles at the time of the presentation of the Augsburg Confession. The Augsburg Confession is written as an appeal to Emperor Charles to observe these abuses and to right the ship. Melanchthon at the time thought that if you were to go after the Pope, it would just be out of hand that Charles would reject what they said, and he ended up rejecting out of hand anyway.
Was there a difference between the timing of this when... from not just reforming the church, but opposing the Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah, so this was, Melanchthon wrote this in 1537, instead
7 years
of
after.
1530.
Sure. Yep.
It's not published until 1540, which is when Melanchthon is composing the Variata to the Augsburg Confession, which is a lot of fun to think about. But it's, today in the Book of Concord, the treatise is appended to the small called articles. It was intended by Melanchthon to be an appendix to the Augsburg Confession, like Article 29 kind of a thing. But the reason why it's appended to the Smalcald articles is because Smalcald was the first group to adopt this as a confessional statement. And so the Smalcaldic League adopts the treatise as a confessional statement.
Interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to just see what they were thinking or what were some of the things they were nervous about in that.
I'm wondering, Andrew, if we can rewind the clock again. Is there a historical precedent for why the Lutherans in the 16th century would reject the Pope as authority? Like, in the history of the papacy, do they have good cause? I mean, doctrinally, that's what the whole treatise is about. We're going to spend the next 7 episodes talking about that. But in the history of the papacy, is there reasons why we would disagree with what the Catholics say about the papacy?
Yeah, I think the development in the Middle Ages was a bridge that even the church fathers wouldn't have agreed with, a bridge going beyond just having Rome as the chief arbiter. The two swords doctrine, the sun and the moon theory, things like that. Are we going to talk about that, or should I?
Yeah, that'll be next episode. We'll talk about two swords, which is just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, the exegesis of the... that's interesting.
Like what I'm hinting at in we want to get something that gives Adam a reason to be crabby and vocal on this episode.
Rejected by everybody but my mother. I don't know how much crabbier I can get.
Well, she's still listening. We want to give her
something to listen to me complain about.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like, you know, you got the three popes
Western Schism and then the three popes.
You got a lot of papal misbehavior. So what's going on in the history of the papacy that probably leads... Was it Leo X is the guy who's the pope when Luther's on the scene? I think it's Leo X. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. It's Leo something.
Leo
or
somebody,
other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those numbers.
Leo X.
Yeah.
It kind of has the flavor of like, this pope did what was right in the eyes of the Lord.
Like the judges.
The judges. It kind of feels like that. But
The late medieval history is a whole different story. And that's what Luther would have been familiar with, what the Lutherans would have been familiar with. The schism, the papacy being kidnapped by France, moved up to France, and just in lockstep with the French government for decades, several popes vying for authority.
Yeah, well, one was named in Avignon, France.
Yep.
Right, and then there was another one. They're like, we're done with this whole France pope thing. We're going to name one in Italy. So they did, and then they realized this isn't going to work. You know, it just doesn't seem to be conducive to proper church administration. So they say we're going to hire a new one. like this is kind of how it goes down. We're going to just hire a new one. I think that guy was that Alexander V. Is that who that was?
I think it was Martin who ended the schism.
No. Martin. I'm not too Martin yet. Stop.
Pope Martin.
Jumping ahead. Yeah. I'm also Pope Martin. Okay. Yeah. I'm not there yet.
See, this is what we wanted.
But
this
Alexander V, right, is the guy. They're like, yeah, no, he's going to be Pope, guys. Sorry. You know, to the two. I can't remember what the other two's name were. But anyway, he's like, yeah, we're gonna name Alexander V. He's good now. And they're like, no, he's not. We're the Pope. And so, like, for a moment in time, there were three popes
in a
claiming...
Mexican standoff,
just disillusioning them, right?
But yeah, so they were all there, and then finally Martin is named Pope, and they kind of just depose all the other guys. And
but
that's
the whole
how it
story
ended.
Is disillusioning, isn't it? To yeah. The yeah. power of the papacy. If they can't figure it out, why do we even have a Pope?
It really does, you know, speak to the illegitimacy of the claim that the papacy is truly the Bishop of Christ. You know, that person on the, you know, in the papal role is the, you know, it just doesn't quite
and just
flow.
The openly sinful yeah. behavior yeah. of these medieval
popes.
And
how
especially.
They got it, yeah. right? That yeah. was the other thing, is how do they get it? How do they get their
you got to know somebody, you know, you're appointed.
Have the right amount of money.
Yeah.
Di Medici is generally the answer to that question yeah. for like 200 years.
Yeah,
that was right. Leo's path.
And, yeah. and you know, and of course, then they gave up, you know, all the earthly wiles and the things that they had, you know, been striving for and laid it all aside. And ruled well, you know, as over the Church of God. No, it was
how did that
sarcasm,
feel
listeners.
Out loud?
And so, yeah, I mean, why give up women when you can have women and be the Pope? You know, I mean, it's just like all of these things. You know, children.
Put that on a pillow.
It reminds me of that line from The Office. Can we quote shows on here? I don't know.
Yeah, we have.
Where Oscar is talking about having two managers and how inefficient that was. He's like, yeah, where would the Pope? Where would the church be without the Pope? Without the popes?
Every good ship has two captains.
Yeah, every good ship has two captains. It kind of devolved, and I think that is. You know, Luther being the intellectual and also the cantankerous, you know, reformer, I think, you know, he saw those things colliding. He knew the doctrinal problems that it was going to cause, but he also railed on the absurdity of it all. And that's what he witnessed. He's like, this is not biblical. It's historically untenable. This just isn't working. And that's kind of how.
Yeah.
That's the dumb man's version of...
Luther's arguments basically condense down to the emperor's new clothes, that the papacy, with what they claim, only really works if they pretend that none of these things matter or happened anymore. And the claim to papal infallibility, even now the Roman Catholics are like, yeah, totally papal infallibility. Maybe this is an overstatement, which is why we brought the expert in, but like it seems to me that like the doctrine of ex cathedra, where when the Pope speaks as Pope, then his words are on par with Christ, that had to be brought forward to explain that sometimes the Pope is poping and sometimes the Pope is not poping, and that's how it determines that we can get around some of these bad things, right? Is that kind of how that works?
I think it's similar to how the crusading plenary indulgences worked. Urban II, you know, promised anybody who went on a crusade would receive the full satisfaction from their sins. And then theologians had to figure out how he was able to say that. Yeah. They had to do the back work to figure out theologically how he was able to say that.
It's like the legal ramifications of a presidential executive
yeah.
order kind
let's
of
let's make
thing.
It work now.
Oh, yeah.
Better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Well, and what we ought to realize is some of this stuff is still being wrestled with today because, sure. you know, as of this recording, which we will be releasing this episode fairly close to the recording, Pope Francis is still with us. His health has been struggling. You never know. At this point, he's been struggling with pneumonia for a while. But part of the struggle with Francis for the last, 10 years now, is that he so frequently shoots from the hip yeah. about moral and social issues. And then he says something, and then it takes 6 months for the Catholics to stop freaking out and realize, wait, was this papal authority? Was, you know, all mm-hmm. of these things. And the spiritual and doctrinal gymnastics that you have to pull off to make this stuff work is essentially why a document like the Treatise of the Power on the Power and Primacy of the Pope has to exist.
Hmm. Yeah, and you know, I wonder how much of this, you know, going all the way back through church history is just when there's a leadership vacuum and the sinful nature gets mixed in with that, and that's something that doesn't change no matter what part of church history we're in.
It's almost like Jesus said directly and not outright that spiritual leadership must look like servanthood. Mm-hmm. It's almost like there's something to that, right?
Well, you know, Pope Gregory said he is the servant of all servants. So,
but yeah, that
sounds like
the servant.
I'm the most humble man ever.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the official title of the Roman emperor was the princeps, is the first among equals, right? It's the same sort of a concept, which is, well, he's the Holy Roman Emperor. I wonder where they got that from.
You're all looking at me awkward. Like I should say something.
Yeah, we got about 2 minutes left. Say something
profound.
Profound or provocative.
Well, I mean, and we kind of touched on this a little bit, but it's not, we're talking about the history of it, but there's very much practical application, which I know we'll talk about in future episodes. But that same hubris that led to the whole, you know, three pope situation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We see it in church history. It has nothing to do with, I don't think, just, it's not limited to Catholicism. It's part of the church. It's part of that mentality of, I need to be important in the church. My way needs to happen in the church. We see it all the time. We see it in leadership. We see it within our own church body. We see it in other church bodies. It's everywhere. It's pervasive because it comes down to human nature.
Yep.
It comes down to the reality that if I'm looking to a human being, such as the Pope, for some sort of security, hope, redemption, life, good word, whatever, I'm going to be disappointed every single time. When I try and supplant Christ from his role, it's going to be problematic. And that's what Luther, I mean, that's the basic gist of what Luther said, wasn't it? I mean, isn't that fair? I mean, and as we unpack this and we see some of the specifics, that's what it's going to boil down to, and is human sin.
The idea behind this is that we are not going to spend 8 episodes on the treatise backing the Holy Pope Mobile over the Roman Catholic Church, that where this finds its end, like you said, Adam, if there's a power struggle in a local congregation, that's a papacy. Mm-hmm. Celebrity pastor culture in the generic American church, that's a papacy. The struggle for worldly power in the kingdom of God is what you end up with. And there's endless application for us right now without us just, you know, kind of rolling our eyes at the Roman Catholics.
Thank you for joining us. Please look us up on the web at beinglutheran.com. Also, invite a friend to check us out on Spotify and iTunes. Please join us next week as Pastor Jason, Pastor Brett, and Pastor Adam, and Pastor Andrew continue their discussion on the treaties of the power and primacy of the Pope. If you would like more information about the Bible School or the seminary, please visit flbc.edu. God bless you and have a great week.